of my title. I feared people thought I would grow to be just like her. Instead, I tried to emulate my father and show kindness and respect to all, but it was not enough to offset her horrid treatment of everyone. I wished I had Nadia's attitude. My cousin did not seem to care what anyone thought of her, while my thoughts were often consumed by what I had said, if it had offended or hurt anyone, if I had done something foolish and embarrassing. My uncle turned a corner off of the main thoroughfare, and the cobbled street seemed to point almost straight up at the face of the cliff. How do they transport the goods up these streets? I wondered out loud. My question was answered when we came upon a small cart being pulled by two donkeys. The cart had a mechanism on the side that looked like a brake. Two men helped steer the contraption slowly up the hill. The men were older than my uncle and stared at me before letting us pass them up the slope.
"We need to get you better clothes on the way."
Beltor grabbed my hand to help me climb up the stone steps that cut a narrower path up a switchback. I tried to reply, but the brief few moments of climbing had taken my breath away, and I could do nothing else but gulp down as much air as possible. My foot was still a little tender, and it was slowing me down as much as my lack of fitness.
"Let's break for a few moments," Uncle said.
We were only a quarter of the way up the winding road on the side of the cliff, but had already ascended what I guess was the entire height of my castle. The Bay of Corona spread out below me, dotted with ships like breadcrumbs on a vast blue blanket. The bay opened into the cloud ocean. I had only been on a boat a few times in my life, and I had not enjoyed it. I knew as soon as we were out on the open water, I would be experiencing plenty of the nausea my uncle was so eagerly anticipating. But anything was worth escaping the ancients, and this plan had been my own idea. "I would like some clothes, thank you, if we have enough money." The dress Greta gave me was dirty and dusty from our travels. The peasant woman's figure differed greatly from mine, and the 4 days hadn't been able to stretch the fabric enough to make it comfortable. Greta was wiry from her work on the farm. Her forearms were strong and muscled, but overall she was much thinner than I was. My chest and hips pushed painfully against the stiff material of the dress, making it difficult to breathe, walk, and ride. I longed for my room back in the castle, my beautiful, comfortable clothes, and my wonderful handmaidens. My mother told me that Sarah, Celia, Levi, Yira, and Domina had been unharmed in the invasion. They had stayed in my mother's quarters with our other handmaidens and then fled the city with their families. I was overjoyed that they had all survived and hoped I could see them again some day.
"We will have to get you something more suitable for traveling, especially with what you are expecting."
He smiled at me and then turned away from the bay to examine the row of brick and clay homes next to us.
"I always wanted to take Satina here. She grew up near the teeth and never wanted to be that far from her family's estates."
Beltor pointed at the decorative white flower designs painted on the borders of the tan buildings.
"She would have loved this architecture and design."
My cousin's mother died a few years before I was born. Nadia and her father had always spoken quite highly of her. I envied the love in their family. Even with Satina gone, Nadia and Beltor seemed happier than my own intact family. My father and mother had been forced to wed, and while they may have made a proper political alliance, their personalities were not suited for one another, and they clashed and raged at each other. My mother could provoke even my calm father to exasperation. The rare times the four of us spent together were fraught with tension and arguments. My mother was always angry, or about to be. My father and I were always at fault and struggling to make it up to her, while my brother sat back and soaked up unearned adoration.
"Did you ever take Nadia here?"
"A few times. Nadia is maybe too much like me and less like her mother. I wanted her to enjoy the beauty of the place, but you know your cousin. She was more interested in racing up the switchbacks and asking the merchants about the naval battles they had witnessed."
He pointed up toward the cliffs. I nodded, and we continued our slow walk. A smile came to my lips when I thought about Nadia's favorite conversation topics.
"You remind me of Satina, Jess. She had this amazing sense of love for all that she saw around her. What you did for that family back in Mariam was a perfect example. The boy tried to violate you. I think most women would have wanted him dead. But you forgave him and his family so easily.
I didn't think you approved. I frowned and pushed the memory of Jerry away. The sick taste of fear entered my mouth and caused me to gasp softly.
It probably would have been easier for Graykin and I to kill them. It would have been just, in keeping with our laws, and would have protected us. I still do not trust that they have not aided the ancients in some way. But mercy is often the wiser choice, and its benefits are revealed in unexpected ways. At least, that was what Satina used to tell me.
I nodded and focused on my breathing. We passed a man and woman walking down the steep cobblestones with a little girl swinging between their hands. She squealed in delight as her young parents hoisted her off the ground and let her fly for a few seconds. I couldn't imagine Graykin or my uncle killing the farmers who had taken me in. Greta, Rayot, and Tira were gentle, innocent people that had done nothing wrong, except caring for me when I needed safe harbor. They could not be held accountable for Jerry's actions, and even he did not do any real harm. I hoped.
The more I thought about it,
he stopped at another switchback and indicated to me that we should rest again.
The more I knew that you were correct. We can't win by being monsters. Satina would have agreed with your decision. She felt that all life was precious and that there was always a solution that was kind and fair to everyone. After all, she would say to me often, our world was created with such beauty. And the spirits of our ancestors watch over us to ensure that we are happy. There may be ugliness that transpires, but it is only temporary as long as we don't let it enter our minds and bodies.
I wish I could have met her. A tight feeling came to my throat, and I felt a tear flow down the side of my cheek. The salty air quickly pulled it away. What I had really meant was that I wished she could have been my mother.
Me as well.
He began walking up the street, and I quickly followed.
I can almost hear her voice now. She would be trying to help me see the best side of things. Belle, you may have lost your kingdom, your brother, your daughter, but at least you are spending some quality time with your niece.
He chuckled to himself, and we walked for the next 5 minutes in silence. The break in our conversation gave me time to think about my uncle, Nadia, and my own family. I had always been somewhat jealous of my cousin, and the feeling crept into my chest again, like a pain from sleeping the wrong way. It was a foolish comparison. I'm sure Nadia would rather have a mother that was alive than one that only her father could tell her about. Yet I was also jealous of Nadia for other reasons. I knew that my father loved me, and he treated me the same as I believed Beltor treated his daughter. But when my father had been alive, most of his day was taken by various matters of the kingdom. I spent time with him every week or so, but Beltor took a personal interest in his daughter, and the two were so much closer than my father and I.
We are here.
Beltor's voice pulled me away from my thoughts, and the tiring climb up the stairs that seemed to be mistakenly considered a street. I looked up at the nondescript building and read the sign over the door. Marietia, midwife, herbalist, and healer. You made this whole walk seem like it was an option. I turned to him and smiled.
I figured that if you had the choice of staying with your mother or coming with me, you would choose the latter.
Do we have an appointment?
No, but we have coin. It will bypass any appointment.
I nodded and followed him to the whitewashed door. It was painted with a stylized impression of a pregnant woman in peach. Beltor held the door for me, and I walked inside. The entryway was guarded by thick bushes of peppermint, rosemary, and sage that crowded up my nose in a friendly fashion. The inside of the shop was lit by oil lamps and a few fat bunches of sage set like torches into the wall and burning with a fragrant smoke. Rows of bookshelves lined almost every open space, but only a few ledges in the corner actually held books. The rest of the shelves were filled with neatly organized terracotta pots, cloth bags, and amber glass jars holding various powders and oils. Paper labels indicated in neatly scribed handwriting what type of medicine each stowed. A series of gentle chimes struck the door and announced to the proprietor that we had entered. The sound made me relax. I took a deep breath of the herb-infused air and released it before my uncle closed the door behind us and made the bells ring again. "Be out in a second," a woman's voice called from a back room. Veltor sniffed the contents of a tiny clay jar and then snorted in disgust, quickly putting it away before the sounds of small footsteps grew louder.
"How can I help you?"
A woman, maybe only 6 or 8 years older than me, asked from behind a wood table supported by a stone shelf. She was a little shorter than me and had curly brown hair that fell past her sunburnt face to her shoulders. Veltor opened his mouth to speak, but then looked at me with an eyebrow raised.
"I believe I am with child," I whispered. Telling my secret to anyone besides my uncle seemed like it should have made me more afraid, but I didn't know this woman. She didn't know me, and I needed her expertise.
"I've been told it happens to us. Would this be your first child?" I nodded and couldn't help but bite my lip.
"When was the last time you had your moon flow?"
"Yaha was empty. Alta was 3/4 full." I had answered the same question from my uncle 6 times. The woman hummed to herself and then walked around her table.
"Come walk with me into the back room." She looked at Beltor. "Are you the father?"
"No, I am her uncle."
The question shocked me a little, but Beltor seemed unfazed, as if he anticipated the assumption. To me, the idea was ludicrous, and the suggestion almost angered me. My uncle was obviously so much older than me, and the idea was repulsive as we were related. But I reasoned that this woman knew nothing of our relationship, and it was not uncommon for much older men to impregnate younger women, joined or not. It would be better if the father of my child was the one bringing me here, I thought bitterly.
"Well, then, uncle, there is a sign by the door that says closed. Please hang it on the handle, lock the door, and take a seat over there in the corner. There is a small burner and a pot of water if you wish to make yourself some tea."
She pointed to a corner where a few worn but comfortable-looking chairs sat next to a kettle and some earthen mugs. Beltor nodded and looked a little relieved that he need not involve himself further in these female matters. The room she led me to was as neatly organized as the front of the store. It had a tidy cot, water pump, washing basin, and every wall was packed with medicinal agents in their various containers. Another door led to the rear garden. A single wide window illuminated the room through lightly frosted glass tinted in pale blue.
"Sit on the bed, please. What is your name, dear?"
She reached up on a shelf and grabbed a jar without even looking at her hand.
"Jess?"
I returned the woman's smile. I couldn't help but like her because of the comfortable way she grinned. She wasn't that much older than Nadia, but her smile was so supportive and caring. I felt at ease letting her take charge as she gave the impression that she was both very capable and very caring.
"I am Marietta. It is nice to meet you, Jess. Have you experienced any pain?"
She grabbed a glass from another shelf and poured a careful amount of greenish powder into it from the other jar.
"No."
"You sure? Nothing in the lower back, breasts, or your stomach?" Marietta took a long silver spoon and carefully stirred some water from the pump into the glass with the green stuff. "We've been riding for the last few days to get here. I am sore from that." I sighed.
"Any nausea or vomiting?"
"No." I frowned as she handed the glass to me. It looked like swamp water and didn't smell much better.
"Drink all of that for me, please."
She prompted me with a smile that showed she knew how awful it would taste. I choked down the foul liquid. It was a mixture of a grass flavor, a sandy texture, and a stifling smell. My stomach almost instantly tried to reject it, but I swallowed an air bubble and gasped in displeasure. She grabbed the glass from my hand and rinsed it off with a pump.
"Do you feel more tired than usual?"
she asked as she wetted her hands at the pump and then washed them with a bar of soap she took from a dish.
"It is hard to tell. I haven't been able to sleep because of the riding."
She nodded and set down the glass on a shelf.
"How about your sense of smell? Noticing that it is growing stronger, more sensitive?"
I shook my head. I was starting to fear my lack of symptoms. Beltor had tried to reassure me that not being nauseated did not mean anything, but he could not disguise his anxious looks when I told him that I felt fine. And it seemed there were no other indications I was pregnant either. But I had to be. We made love so many times, and my moonflow was gone. And I wanted this so badly. I refused to let the thoughts of what Jerry had done enter my mind. Lie down on the bed, please, Jess. She pointed at the cot, and I leaned back onto the fabric of the cover. The cloth was cool against my head and smelled of mint. I was suddenly overcome with exhaustion and my body relaxed. After what I thought was a minute, she began lightly rubbing around the front of my neck with her fingertips. "Where is the father?" Marietta lifted my left hand and felt my pulse at the wrist. "He is in the capital," I whispered. "I see." Her hands moved down to my stomach and gently continued to push there against the thin fabric of my dress. "Have you been under more stress than you are used to?" I thought carefully before I answered. "Yes, I haven't had a very difficult life. I am not used to worrying so much." "Since he went to Naya?" She raised an eyebrow. "I've been worried since he left, yes. I am more worried now with this gift coming. I know he is okay, but I miss him as much as I miss my father."
"Your father went to Naya also?"
She rubbed on the sides of my hips where the bones were. It made my body relax even more. I recalled how Kair would sometimes touch me after our lovemaking, but then I forced the image out of my head. I didn't want to become aroused while this woman touched me and spoke about my father. "No, he died."
"Recently?"
"A few weeks before my mate left to go to Naya. We heard that my father may have died. He set off to see if it was true, or if any other family members had escaped the city." The woman hummed an acknowledgement and then moved her hands down to my thin leather boots. She took them off and examined my ankles and the ball of my foot. "I need to do an internal examination. I will leave the room. Please remove your dress and any undergarments and put on this gown." She handed me a thin cotton shift with a loose neckline. I nodded and stood up from the cot, nervously. She exited the room and I stood there alone, breathing deeply for a moment, before her shakily undressing. My handmaidens and Kair had been the only people to ever see me naked. All feelings of sleep fled my body as I quickly pulled the dress over my head, unwrapped the tightly bound cloth I kept over my breasts, and pulled down my undergarments. I neatly folded them and placed them on the floor next to the cot. I slipped on the robe she had left for me. It smelled of the same cool mint as the sheets on the cot. I sat back down, unsure what to do next, but soon she knocked softly on the door. "Come in," I said, feeling strange inviting her into her own room. She smiled warmly again as she entered, and I felt myself relax. She had a gift for putting others at ease. Perhaps this was why she chose this profession. I imagined it was an extremely valuable trait to women in childbirth. She went to the basin again, washed her hands thoroughly, and approached the cot.
"Don't worry, Jess. I've done this many times before and had it done to me. I know it is uncomfortable, so it will just take a few seconds. Lie down, please."
I nodded and went back into my earlier position. I knew she must do this for my baby, but having someone unknown touch me made me uncomfortable. Her hands pushed gently against each one of my breasts for a few moments. They were warm against my skin, so the sensation wasn't completely unpleasant, but I still would have rather them been Kair's hands.
"Spread your legs a little, Jess. I'm sorry, but this will be a bit uncomfortable."
I did as I was told and gritted my teeth when Marietta's fingers opened my entrance slightly. My nails dug into the cloth of the cot, and I tried not to scream. It didn't really hurt, but the feeling of her fingers was so invasive. I couldn't stand the sensation. I imagined Kair's face smiling down at me and how beautiful our baby would be. I told myself that I needed to do this to ensure his gift would be healthy. She reached deeper, and I tried to concentrate on her face instead of the awkward sensation of her probing me. It was hard to read her face. She did not look alarmed, but not relieved either.
"That is it, Jess. Sorry again," she said apologetically.
"I just need you to do one last task, but you can put your clothes back on." I nodded.
"Take this bottle outside."
She handed me a wide-mouthed glass jar with a handle on its side. The container reminded me of something Graykin would drink from.
There is a toilet in my garden. The mixture I gave you is a slight diuretic and will make you pee. Please try to fill the whole jar.
Okay. She exited the room, and I let out a deep breath. I removed the shift she had given me and stared down at my belly. The bruises from Jury had faded to an odd yellow-green color that almost blended into my skin. But I would never forget the pain and fear he had left me with.
"You okay in there?"
I said softly. I ran my hands over my belly, wishing I could caress the little baby, reassure it, and hold it now. My eyes burned, and I fought to hold back tears. I did not know that anything was wrong, but I had a terrible feeling. Marietta had been so kind, but she had done nothing to reassure me. I put my clothes back on and inhaled deeply. I refused to cry yet. I refused to admit that it was possible something was wrong with our baby. I clutched the glass to my chest and walked out the other door. The garden was as organized as the inside of the shop, with neat rows of bushes, plants, vines, and ceiling trellises that supported hanging fruits and roots. A tall fence surrounded the small plot of land and gave a sense of calm serenity. In one corner of the fence was a clay toilet that had a hanging curtain of oilcloth above it for even more privacy. I stepped into the corner, lowered the curtain, and then went about the task of filling up the jar.
"Thank you," Marietta said when I returned. "I'll let your uncle know that you are still okay. He is waiting quite patiently."
I nodded and watched her take the jar and pour my urine into six smaller glass dishes. Each one was a quarter full with herbs that were slightly different shades of ivory.
"What will that do?" I asked.
"It will give me clues as to your condition. Can you lie back on the bed? It will take about a quarter of an hour to get the results, and I think some rest will let your body and mind recover from your travels." I smiled at her and returned to the cot. Marietta hummed to herself while she quietly organized some of the contents of the shelf. Then I closed my eyes, and I heard her footsteps leave the room. For the thousandth time today, I wished Kair was with me. I had never witnessed childbirth and didn't know what to expect. As much as I wanted this baby, the idea of giving birth even months from now scared me. My handmaidens were supposed to teach me about it, but not until after I was joined. Ostensibly, it was kept secret because a maiden had no need of this knowledge. But I knew this was a practice in place to keep from scaring young women away from sex, and the fact that they felt the need to keep the horrors of childbirth secret only scared me more. Everything had started this wild spin out of control when I was kidnapped by the ancients. Or maybe it started when I followed Nadia to Van Lorn and met Kair. I was smart enough to know it was foolish, but I had to go. I had to escape the constant watch of my mother, her frustration that seemed exacerbated by everything I said or did. Nadia was always so content, so perfect and satisfied with her life, and so passionate about her studies and her missions. I wanted to be just like her, and I hoped that by taking some initiative and striking out on my own, I could be. Nobody seemed to want me the way I was. I should have stayed home, done what they expected, and remained out of everyone's way. I only angered Nadia and upset her mission. Even Graykin had been mad at me. Finding her had been so exciting, and I had taken so much pride in my independence. But it was not me. I was not a leader, and I had never really been independent. I had just followed Nadia, and Graykin had followed me. If anything had gone wrong, he would have been there to help. Would my life have been better if I had never met Kair? The thought almost made me laugh. It was so foolish. He had nothing to do with me being kidnapped. He was the one to risk his life and chase after the ancients on foot through the cold winter weather. Kair may have pushed the ancients to make an aggressive move against my kingdom sooner than my father expected, but eventually they would have come for us. They would have killed my father, mother, and brother. They would have killed me, if not for Kair. I sat up with a startled gasp and felt panic flood into my lungs like a tidal wave. I must have fallen asleep for longer than an hour. The sun had moved up into the sky, and it looked to be more like midday than early morning. The various bowls of herbs bathed in my urine were gone, and I heard voices out in the front of the store. A As silently as I could, I crept to the door leading to the hallway and cracked it open. It made a soft squeak that caused me to wince, but the voices out front didn't seem to notice. It was only a few feet of hallway to the main room, and I could hear them clearly.
"Is she ready to be woken yet?"
I recognized my uncle's voice. "I suppose so. Did you get the clothes you need?" Marietta responded.
"Aye. Any change with your test?"
"No."
"So you are sure of the results?"
"Yes. I want to see her again in 2 weeks. She should have her moon flow by then. She needed the rest. I am glad you agreed to leave her with me for a bit. She fell asleep almost as soon as her head hit the pillow." Marietta's voice was laced with concern, and I felt my stomach drop again. The door I was leaning against almost seemed too heavy to bear.
"We are leaving today. There will be other midwives where we are going."
"Where is that? I can recommend someone for you."
"I would rather not say. I'll wake her now, if you please."
Beltor's tone changed slightly, and Marietta knew better than to argue. I pushed the door open and walked down the hallway to the main room. Before I could get there, I felt the tears come to my eyes, warm and stinging. "What is wrong with my baby?" I attempted to say, but the words came out garbled, choked off, and wet. My uncle and the midwife were sitting by the tea kettle, and my appearance brought both of them to their feet. I tried to push my uncle away so that he would tell me about my baby, but his big arms encircled my chest and pulled me to his. It only made me cry more. Then the cries turned into sobs and then screams that his chest couldn't muffle. Kair might be dead. Now his child was, too.
"Shh, it is okay, Jess."
Marietta had been smoothing back my hair in an attempt to comfort me. She may have been speaking to me for the last few minutes that Beltor held me, but I only heard her after the sadness finally quieted my cries.
"You haven't lost a baby."
Her words stifled my sobs and gave me hope. "I haven't." I pulled away from my uncle's wet tunic and tried to wipe my eyes. I was sure I looked less than ladylike and was thankful that my mother couldn't see me now.
"No, please sit."
She motioned to the chair, and the worn leather of the seat cushioned my back like an old friend.
"You must really want this baby."
Marietta smiled at me, and I nodded. "I love the father more than I can express." The words came before I realized they were true.
"I can tell."
She nodded and smiled, but I noticed my uncle frown with worry.
"I've had to give this news before. Most of the time the women are relieved, but I do not think you will feel the same. I'm sorry, Jess. You didn't lose the baby, because there was never a child in your womb. You are not pregnant."
"There must be a mistake. My moon flow." I tried to piece together what the curly-haired woman was telling me. How could I not be with child?
"Sometimes it is delayed. Could be from stress, lack of sleep, a change in diet, travel, the loss of your mate."
Marietta shrugged and smiled faintly.
"But it has been so long." "I expect you'll get it in the next few days. You need to rest. I've had some of my patients go many cycles without one."
"Your tests are wrong." I felt frustration growing, and I wanted to lash out at her. She looked pleased, as if all of my problems were solved by this news. As soon as the anger flared up, I felt it fade away. Marietta was just trying to help me. She did not understand who I was, what I had been through, or how much I wanted Kair's child. I sighed and looked up at my uncle. "We made love almost every day. More often than not, it was 2 or 3 times a day, for weeks." Beltor's face twisted unpleasantly, but he didn't speak.
"I can tell you 2 facts and 1 opinion. You are not pregnant, you are fertile, and so it is possible that your mate is sterile."
"I am fertile?" I licked my lips and rubbed my hands against my stomach slightly before I stopped. I remembered the blow Jerry had given me, and was grateful he had not hurt our baby or impaired my ability to have another one. I was devastated, yet it was somehow more comforting to know that there had never been a baby than that one had lived and died inside of me. I would still have time to give Kair a child. We would try again when we were reunited.
Yes, the tests performed make me confident that you can bear children. So, if what your claim is true about your lover's prowess, he may be the one unable to give you a child. It is not unheard of. Or your timing may simply have been off. I nodded. I was relieved, but still wished that I carried Kair's child. I had already imagined how beautiful he or she would be, how wonderful it would be to raise it with Kair, and how we would spend the rest of our lives together as a perfect family. I would be a better mother than my own. The child would grow up surrounded by love, seeing the love Kair and I shared, knowing it was wanted and adored. I could give it love like I never had from my mother, and a childhood unlike mine. Would it have been a boy or a girl? Would it have Kair's green eyes or my blue? Would its hair be blonde or dark brown? Would it have his eyelashes and my dimples? I'd need to examine your maid, to be sure, or any other midwife or physician worth their herbs would be able to tell them. Marietta's voice cut through the mental images of babies and brought me back to the present. She squeezed my shoulder reassuringly before she smiled again. Do you have any questions for me? No, I said, even though I wanted to ask 100 more times if she was sure. There are good midwives in every major city for when you are ready to conceive. I can give you a recommendation if you'll tell me where you are heading. She smiled at my uncle.
How much do we owe you for your services?
I noticed Beltor was carrying a bundle of clothes wrapped in dark brown paper and tied with a rough-looking cord. No charge, uncle. She smiled at the family title she used for Beltor and shook her head at his refusal to tell her where we were heading. You weren't really able to use my services. I deliver babies for a fee. Contrary news is free.
Then take a donation.
He handed her a small stack of coins. The woman tried to push them back, but Beltor was used to commanding people. She quickly gave up her struggle and accepted the money. Goodbye, Jess, she sang after me when we stepped out of the store. I looked back to catch her wave and big smile. The woman tossed her hair over her shoulder and then gently closed the door once we walked off the property. Then we stood on the steep cobblestone streets that gave us the breathtaking view of the bay. How long did I sleep? I asked Beltor.
About an hour and a half. The midwife convinced me that you needed the rest.
I nodded and tried to smile, but I still hadn't fully digested the news of my pregnancy.
I guessed on your size, but here are a few pairs of traveling pants, blouses, undergarments, a better-fitting cloak, and boots.
He smiled at the bundle. It looked surprisingly small under his arm. My uncle wasn't as big as Graykin. Few men were even close, but he was stout and muscular. Oh, my mother and Graykin will be worried, I said as I carefully stepped down a steep set of stairs to a walkway on the side of the main road. It was by a bakery and soup shop, and the smell of the sharp sourdough bread and stewing tomatoes made my mouth water.
Graykin will be beside himself.
I frowned and continued to walk away from the delicious scents. I would probably never be able to make my mother happy, but the old bear didn't deserve to be worried, even though I had pushed him away in the last few days. Is he mad at me? I asked my uncle, even though I already knew the answer.
No, of course not. I think he is hurt, though. I can understand why you didn't want to tell him about your pregnancy, but he doesn't know the reasons. All he knows is the girl he has cared for since she was a baby is pushing him away. The presence of your mother is also making it difficult on him. He swore to protect her when she was wed to your father, and she is more than an annoyance.
I'll talk to him. I should tell him about what happened.
Maybe you don't need to explain everything.
Beltor smiled at me.
The old bear already feels terrible about losing you. I don't know how he would react to knowing that you and Kair were lovers out of joining. He might murder Kair.
We both laughed, and I nodded in agreement. My uncle was probably right about Graykin. He was better off imagining I was the virgin he needed me to be. He would probably prefer to think of me that way even if I'd born 15 children. I'll make amends some other way. He nodded in agreement, and we continued our walk for a few more minutes down the hill in silence. Uncle?
He had been staring out over the Aqua Bay while we walked, and my voice brought his attention to me. Graykin would be mad if he knew. My mother would be horrified, and I think my father would have sent me away if he had known about Kair. I still love him, though, and I don't regret what I've done. I wish I was carrying his child. Does that make me unfit to be a noblewoman?
That is an odd question, Jez. I don't know if you are really looking for me to give you an honest answer.
What do you mean? I asked.
It isn't a question of royalty or nobility. I have a feeling that you would be happy with him in any situation, but I question Kair's motives.
He frowned at me and noticed that I was slightly out of breath from walking down the hill. He motioned for us to rest against the wood railing that protected pedestrians from falling off the steep side of the road. His motives? He did not have any motives. We were in love, so we made love. There was no nefarious reason for it. I thought framing the question as I had would have allowed my uncle to express his feelings by projecting them onto my parents and Graykin without him directly having to say how he felt about my indiscretions. But instead I was defending Kair. It made me angrier than I thought I should have been, that my uncle questioned his intentions and worthiness. I thought you liked him. Didn't he save you from our enemies?
He did, and I do like the boy. However, there is still much we don't understand about him. It seems that he may not even know much about himself.
I understand him. He is brave and good, and he loves me. In Brilla, he protected me from assassins. He saved me from the ancients. He ran after me for weeks, all alone, on foot, with no concern for himself. He was so desperate to save me. What could motivate such recklessness save love? I felt the disappointment and desperation seep into my words. If my uncle didn't approve of Kair, I knew that my father would not have either.
I am not arguing with you about his heroic deeds. I just worried that your feelings for him might not be reciprocated in full.
He loves me. I spat the words out and glanced away from my uncle. The ships in the harbor below looked small enough to fit in my hand. I couldn't even make out which one was the one Beltor had acquired earlier this morning.
Men will often make false declarations when attempting to seduce a beautiful woman.
He did not seduce me. I made the decision, I said indignantly. Beltor still viewed me as a child, immature and unworthy of Kair's love. I was beginning to think my uncle respected me after the time and secrets we had shared, but he was just like the rest of my family. I thought back to the various times Kair and I talked, shared our bodies, our thoughts, and meals together. The weeks we spent in the cave, on the road traveling home, and in Meriem. I had worried about becoming pregnant before, but he indicated his support of whatever happened. He had never told me he loved me, but I knew it was true. His actions proved how he felt. I never told him I loved him either, but I do. I told him I needed him. I told him that I didn't want him to go back to Naya. Beltor said nothing for a few moments. The wind picked up from the ocean, and a small group of gulls spun up through the air on the empty cliffs in front of us. The biggest of the bunch squawked with gusto, and the rest followed him higher into the city.
When Adia was growing up, I talked to her about how to choose the right man to wed. You cannot judge a man's character by what he says or even what he does when you are alone. You must judge his actions both toward you and toward other women.
He looked at me with a smirk, and I raised my eyebrow. My father had never discussed anything like this with me, as he would have chosen my husband, and not based solely on character.
A man might be charming, heroic, and a great lover to you, but if he is also this way with other women, he is not the right mate. Similarly, if he is kind to you, yet cruel to others, he is not a good man. I would guess you don't want to share Kair with any other women.
Of course not. Why would you ask this? Fear chilled my skin. Suddenly the wind felt icy instead of refreshing. Did Kair tell you he loved another? Beltor put his hand on my shoulder to stop my question. His grip tightened around me almost painfully, and I yelped in surprise.
Shit,
he said in undisguised fear. His mouth hung open and his face was white. The main road leading out of Reliat and into the rest of our country was about a quarter of a mile up the sheer wall. Instead of trade carts pulled by donkeys or couriers with their port orders, the pathway was filled with ancients. Their armor glittered like the sun on the ocean, but conveyed none of the warmth.
"Are they coming for me?" I asked. My legs went numb.
"I can't think of any other reason they would be here."
Beltor pulled on my arm, and we hastened down the street. We were still in the heart of the city, high on the cliffs, maybe only a few hundred yards away from the safety of our ship if we were the gulls I had just seen, but a mile or two away on foot. Screams echoed down upon us from the cliff roads. It sounded like an ocean's wave of terror was descending on the beautiful city.
"Run, Jess, we must make it to the ship, understand?"
I gasped and pointed at the road ahead of us. A small group of armored ancients had stopped a crowd of humans. Beltor and I skidded to a halt on the steep street, and I almost fell. The soldiers looked past the humans they were questioning and up at us. The three of them had the eyes and hair the same color as the ones that had visited Rayot's home, red and gray.
"Come over here, humans,"
one of them commanded with a yell. Beltor grabbed my hand and sighed. His mouth formed a firm line, and his eyes looked at me in sadness. We were caught.
Chapter 10 The O'Barney. I couldn't breathe suddenly, and my consciousness flew up out of my hazy slumber into the darkness of the night with a choking sound that couldn't escape from my mouth or nose. I struggled against the fingers that held my nostrils and jaw closed, but the grip felt strong enough to rip my face off if it chose to. My arms swam through my bed of hay and grabbed onto the hand that was killing me. I couldn't pull it away or push myself back into my bed to escape my imminent death. Shh! It was her. It took my brain a few seconds to tell my heart and arms to relax. "Do not cry out, lover," she whispered, and her warm breath tickled my earlobe. It sent shivers down my spine, and I tried not to moan in pleasure. I nodded that I understood, and she took her hand from my face. I gulped air in relief. I knew it was still night, but I could not tell the hour. The stable doors were closed, preventing me from judging the time by the brightness of the moon. Why was she here? I could only think of two possible reasons. She either wanted another bout of lovemaking from me, or she had grown bored with our trysts and decided that tonight was the night she would end the relationship, possibly by ending my life. I quickly reasoned that if she wanted to kill me, she would have done so by smothering me before I woke, or she would have done it in front of her entourage for sport. Our masters took joy in causing us pain, humiliation, and death. Iola Rothy was known to have special talents in viciousness, and I had seen her rip apart one of her prized stallions because the animal had thrown her. "How can I serve you?" I whispered. I didn't believe in any of the bullshit gods that most of the human slaves worshipped, but I almost wished that they were real. Then I could pray to them for protection from the fire that was this woman. "Always so eager to please, aren't you, Kyair?" Her voice was half purring cat and half honey. It made my stomach flip and a shiver run down the sides of my arm from my neck. "For you," I smiled as she pulled away from me. I could hardly see her face in the darkness, just the shape of her cascading hair and her eyes. They were such a bright silver that they seemed to pool all of the light in the dark stables and reflect it in a bluish glow. "You are good with your mouth." The tips of her fingers brushed my face and then traced the outline of my lips. I parted them slightly, and I took a risk by letting the tip of my tongue flick out and touch her. She let out a soft moan and leaned in toward me. The fingers around my lips moved away and were replaced by her soft mouth. Normally, when she kissed me, it was forceful. It was raw hunger, lust and desire and need. This kiss was soft and gentle, My tongue explored hers slowly, and it tasted of sweet mead. Do you remember many months ago, when I told you I would teach you to ride? Her breath came out in long pants that hinted at her excitement. Yes, I tried not to let hope coat my words. Before we had become lovers, she had told me she would teach me. Even after half a year had passed, I had never dared to bring it up again. Iolorothi was still the chieftain's daughter, still feared by all of her people, and she still visited my stable 3 or 4 times a week with her admirers while pretending to ignore me. I was just thankful that she had taught me how to be her lover, even in secret. I was thankful that she hadn't killed me. Tonight is the night, Kaer. Come down to the horses, and we will ride together. She moved to the side of me and jumped down from the hayloft, making an almost inaudible clap when her feet touched the dirt below me. It was about 12 feet to the floor, so I felt my way to the edge of the loft where the ladder hung. I had grown up in this stable and knew it better than my own body. When I reached it, I lowered myself to the ground with practiced ease. Shh! Prepare some saddles. Bring extra blankets. Iolorothi had produced a small flame that she held in her hand like a cup of water grasped at the base. The fire was only as bright as a candle, but in the absolute darkness of the stable, it created more than enough light to see. She had opened a stall in the middle of the lane where one of the gated mares was kept. The horse appeared to be awake, and my master's gentle hush was soothing to the animal. I grabbed the appropriate mare's kit with an extra blanket and tried to quell the sinking fear in the pit of my stomach. The thought of riding the large animal made me nervous. Humans weren't allowed on horses, and if any of the other elvens saw me riding, I would probably be killed. It might also jeopardize Iolorothi. Her kin might ask what she was doing with me out in the dead of night on a horse. Perhaps she would have to kill me to save face with them. There were many ways this could go wrong. Yet I had always wanted to ride a horse. I spent all my time taking care of them. I was with horses more than I was around humans, and when I was not dreaming of the elven woman, I dreamt of riding a horse, controlling its movements, feeling its power beneath me. I imagined galloping faster than the wind through the grassy plains surrounding us. I had never been more than a mile from the smithy and stables where I was raised. A ride on a horse would show me the rest of the world. It could lead to freedom. Which was exactly why we were forbidden to ride. "You take this one," she patted the mare after I had finished saddling the beast. I nodded and tried to hide my smile. The horse was of gentle temperament and had never given me any problems in the stable. This was actually going to happen. "I'll ride this one, Kaer. Saddle him for me," Iolorothi pointed at the black stallion she had been favoring for the last few weeks. He was new to the chieftain's stables and had been quite spirited. My lover had broken him quickly, and he was now as gentle as a newborn kitten. Excellent choice. I left the mare out in the throughway of the stable and quickly saddled her horse while she perched on her usual stool behind me. "You are efficient with your hands and body," she whispered. "It is what I noticed first about you." "Thank you, mistress." I felt my heart leap with pleasure. She often complimented me during or after our lovemaking, but this was the first time I could recall her saying something like this before our clothes were off. "Most of your kind are so slow, clumsy, and stupid, hardly a step above the livestock that we slaughter for sustenance. But you are different, Kaer. There is something almost elven about you." I tightened the last strap on the saddle and turned to look at her. The magic fire she carried in her hand reflected red in her silver eyes. You are quite definitely human. Your body is thick and squat, but you move with grace as our kind does. You also smell interesting, not quite human or elven. Perhaps there is magic about you. Some of our kind carry gifts beyond the world. I wouldn't put it past our gods to bestow some of those onto one of your kind in jest. I do not know anything about that, mistress. I am just a stable boy that is honored by your attention. My head bowed, and I took the reins of the stallion to lead it out of the stall. I was not sure how to respond to her. I feared accepting the compliment would anger her, yet I could not disagree outright and downplay my strengths, as that would call her judgment into question. I hoped feigning ignorance would placate her. She was volatile and still difficult for me to read, at least when we were speaking. My pet is so humble. I will enjoy teaching you to horseback ride tonight. I believe you will learn it as quickly as the other type of riding I taught you. Her voice ended in a soft laughter that sounded as wonderful as the first spring rain. I just want to please you, mistress. It was true, not just out of fear. I was growing to care deeply about her opinion of me. I handed her the reins of the stallion and then opened the door of the stable that led to the pastures. You do. You will, I heard her say to my retreating back. The mare stamped her foot in approval when I opened the doors and exposed the green moonlight. The stallion used to jump and bound about with endless energy, but as soon as Io Lorothi mounted him, the stallion seemed to sense the secrecy of our frolic and kept himself calm. "Mount your steed," she said, as she nudged her horse past me. I nodded to the darkness and ran back to the mare. My hands were slick with nervous sweat, and I examined the stirrups carefully. I'd never done this, but I had seen my masters do it countless times. I grabbed the loop and slipped my bare foot into it. Then I mustered all my strength, pushed down on my left leg, jumped up with my right, and pulled on the lip of the saddle. Surprisingly, I finished on top of the mare with little fuss. "Squeeze your heels into the flanks of the horse. It will follow my lead." She made some small movement in her legs, and her stallion meandered out of the stable and into the pasture. I pushed my heels into the sides of my mare, and she didn't move. Then I increased the pressure until she finally did. I wondered briefly if the mare was being stubborn, or if I hadn't used enough of my strength through my heels. I was riding. The joy clawed its way from my legs and hips to my brain after the horse had taken half a dozen steps into the pasture. What would Leotol think of this? He'd be envious. We had talked about how it would feel to sit so high, to feel the sky so open, and to feel the wind in our faces as we rode. I almost wanted to jump off the horse, run into the smithy shop he shared with Father, and brag to him right now. "I can tell you are enjoying yourself," Io Lorothi said, as she backed her horse up next to mine. "Thank you, mistress. This is wonderful. I have always wanted to ride a horse." Tears came to my eyes, but I blinked them away. No telling how she would respond if I showed too much emotion. Each time she spoke, a frisson of fear and pleasure coursed through my body. This was how it always was between us, but tonight I had the added element of fear of being caught riding. I could not fully relax and ignore that fear, though I wanted to let myself go the way I did when we made love. I continued to glance around and worry she was speaking too loud. "You are not riding yet, Kyair." She let out a laugh of amusement. "You are just walking the horse. It is easy enough, but hardly any fun. Let us trot. Click your heels into the animal's side twice with force. I nodded and did as she asked. Suddenly, my mare increased her walk to a bumpy jog that threatened to launch me from the saddle. Push your legs into the stirrups, heels down, back straight, she instructed while she trotted beside me. The cold night air blew into my face and froze the tip of my nose, but I could observe Iola Rothy alternating a standing motion in time with her own horse's steps. I followed her instructions and found that the bumps smoothed. They were still uncomfortable, but I felt more in control of the massive beast beneath me. "Pull the reins back and down to stop," she said, after 10 minutes of circling around the pasture. I obeyed her command, and the mare stopped quickly. Trotting is boring. Cantering is much more fun. She gave me a wicked grin that made me think she might skip some steps with my instruction. Turn the animal's head this way with your reins, she demonstrated, yanking her reins on one side and turning her stallion's head. Then you move your same leg back to the horse's hip. She looked down at her right leg while her hair draped over her shoulder. I could see her shift her heel toward the rear of the horse. Opposite leg digs in the same middle flank as a trot. Then she will canter for you. Do it. She repeated the steps she had just showed me, and her mount launched forward with the graceful stride that I had seen thousands of times. She flew away into the green moonlight. Her dark horse blended into the night and gave the impression she was floating. Her hair streamed out behind her and danced to the sound of the wind. I wanted to dance with her across the pasture. She was so free. I carefully turned my mare's head with the reins, moved my heel back, and then I pushed with both heels. I was surprised again when my horse dashed forward in a gentle, loping motion. It was exhilarating. I was really riding. The wind blew cool in my face, and I could hear the patter of my mount's hooves. I had to be moving twice as fast as I could run. It was amazing. Then suddenly, it was too fast. My face must have revealed my panic, because Iola Rothy was instantly back at my side. Move your hips with the animal. I tried to comply. Slow your hips now. I nodded through gritted teeth and forced my body to do what she said. Excellent. If you are skilled, you can canter as slow as a trot. This will tire the horse, though. I nodded and gasped to catch my breath. It was much more comfortable to canter, but I wasn't happy with how quickly the animal traveled. You are good at this, Kyair. I think you already ride better than any of my suitors. She laughed again and spun the horse. Then she somehow made it trot backward to keep pace with me. We'll go a few more times around the pasture. She smiled, and the moonlight reflected off of her eyes and teeth. I nodded and tried to focus on my legs. They were already sore from trying to hold the right position to make the horse canter. Pace me, lover, she commanded, and then spun her mount again before cantering away from me. I tried to adjust my hips, but it took me a few minutes to figure out how to get the horse to obey. By the time we matched her speed, she had already done a lap around the fence, and I was able to stay right behind her. We spent another 10 minutes riding around the field until I grew more comfortable with the speed and feel of my steed. She watched me and barked instructions to help improve my technique. I followed her instructions, and she appeared pleased with the results. Finally, she yelled at me to stop, and we rested in front of the gate at the far end of the pasture opposite the stables. "You are ready to go out into the grasslands," I nodded and licked my lips nervously.
Occasionally, I would help my father mend the fence at the end of the feeding pasture, but I had never gone beyond it, to the rolling green hills that surrounded our home. Iola Rothy seemed to sense my fear and reassured me. "Do not worry, lover. I often ride out there. I assure you that there is nothing more dangerous than me within a few thousand miles. Open the gate," she commanded. I nodded and tried to dismount.